is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Preparing for apocalypse in the Pacific, the worst case scenario. The man who wants peace, prepare for war. I welcome Mark Montgomery of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral, and Bradley Bowman of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. These gentlemen, a conversation with the 26th commander of the United States Indo-Pacific Command, Indo-PACOM, Admiral John Aquilino. Indo-PACOM is the oldest and largest combatant command covering 36 nations, I read from the FGD site. In conversation with the Admiral, Mark and Brad, take us to the Indo-PACOM as it sees the threat today and what needs to be done. It's a podcast. It's available on the FGD website. I urge you to enjoy it. It's more than an hour, and it's very, very threatening. Mark, Admiral, I begin with you because you were keen on breaking down the services, and are they ready? Are they getting ready? The Navy, okay. The Marines, superior. The Air Force, you hesitated. Why? What does the Air Force need, Admiral? Good evening to you.
Well, John, thanks for having me. And I would hate to discriminate between the services. I all think that they are making investments. I think they all have done some good things, but they all have shortfalls that they've got to address. Now, you're absolutely right. I kind of highlighted the Air Force in two areas. One is in bringing the strike. You know, one of the most important elements of the Air Force is their striking mission, particularly against shipping. And it's a mission the Air Force has not always embraced. The striking land targets in support of the ground forces is kind of their bread and butter. Shooting down other aircraft is their bread and butter. Shooting ships has always been this other thing. Well, in this fight, in this largely air maritime fight, we need them to attrite away the high-end Chinese shipping. And really the best weapons for doing that are a weapon called the long-range anti-ship cruise missile, launched from predominantly Air Force bombers. And they've been using the B-1. And the B-1 is an aging bomber. The B-1's an aging bomber that we have fewer and fewer every year. And it has one of the lowest levels of readiness in the Air Force of any airframe. And in fact, the Air Force has been trying to decommission them, you know, and get rid of them. So we've been arguing for them to transition this weapon, this LRASM weapon, to the B-52. And for the last 5 years, the Air Force has said, no problem, it'll take us 4 years. And then the next year, you ask them, they say, no problem, it'll take us 4 years. And you start to realize they're not putting the investment into doing it. So big shortfall there in not getting that weapon system onto the B-52. It's not the only, it won't break the war fight, but it certainly damages our ability to punish the enemy. The second issue I would tell you is agility. You know, one of the ways the Air Force has got to move and move and move. It can't stay at one big air base like we could in a war in the Middle East or something like that at Al Udeid or one of our other large air bases. You have to be agile and mobile. And for that, they've developed something called the Agile Combat Employment Strategy. But again, great strategy, poor execution. They have not bought the deployable airbase sets and the numbers they need. Those are temporary runway sets that you can set up at any civilian runway to make it a military runway. And they don't do near enough exercising at Japanese airfields other than the ones they normally operate at. So I would tell you the Air Force is missing in two big areas. That doesn't mean they're not doing great work in other ones. But if they don't fix those two big areas, B-52s with LRASM and deployable airbase sets, we're going to have a real problem.
Brad, distributed force structure. These are terms of art you and your colleagues were using in this conversation about preparing the Pacific, especially about infrastructure. What does that mean? What do we need to do, Brad?
Yeah, no, thanks, John. And great comments from my colleague Mark there. You know, here's the idea. I think a lot of Americans, and dare I say maybe some of the folks listening in to your show, may not realize that the days of the 1991 Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Gulf War are long past. And by that, I mean, if we can't establish a huge mountain of steel, protect it, and launch our military operations at a time and place of our choosing. And that's because, for a variety of reasons, China's fielding the long-range strike capabilities to decimate such a main operating base. So if our forces are going to survive and fight, and thereby bolster deterrence, they have to be distributed, i.e. spread out. And so this is a little bit, this is related to Mark's point about agile combat employment. An Air Force doctrine where you're going to be mobile, you're going to be moving, you're going to have lily pads you're going to jump to, you're going to be able to repair runways quickly. It's the idea that if we put all of our forces in one place, they will not survive and they will not be able to fight. So you got to spread them out. But if you spread them out, that has all kinds of implications for weapon systems, for doctrine, for command and control, and all kinds of things that may not be sexy that are logistical related, but are absolutely fundamental to combat operations.
And where is that for the Admiral now? Did you get a sense, Brad, or are they moving on that story?
I'm eager to hear from Mark on this. My sense, and almost everywhere we look, there's good intentions and there's some progress, but I think just not the sense of urgency that we need, given what we're seeing in the threat environment that we discussed with Admiral Aquilino on the podcast. Mark, would you agree with that?
Yeah, so I agree. I think it's one of these things where they've laid out the concept. They aspirationally understand what they need to do. I would just say it's one of those areas where they just have not, each of the individual services has not contributed enough to make the whole joint concept, in my mind, successful. Doesn't mean they won't get there, but they do need more focus. Uh-huh. I think you heard Admiral Aquilino, a little bit of angst from him on that, and the need to, as he's approaching the end of his tour, 3 years as the Indo-PACOM commander, and his 6 months to go here, he's pushing hard to make sure this next budget cycle, this fiscal year 25 budget cycle, reflects some of the investments that are necessary.
Another term of art, Admiral, contested logistics. What does that mean?
Well, this is the backbone of everything Brad just laid out really well, right? The backbone of having a distributed force network, having a good forward posture, having resilient warfighters is being able to execute logistics in a contested environment. Look, we are world-class logisticians, the United States military. There's no one else like us. No one else can execute extended 8,000-10,000-mile campaigns. We have done it since 1990. There's nobody, we could even argue we've done it since 1950. We have fought pretty distant away games, whether it's Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, OIF, OEF. These are all long-range things. We saw what happened to the Russian military when they tried to execute a reasonably short-range logistics fight. They lost the ability to conduct large-scale maneuver warfare, largely, I think, because their warfighters weren't smart or capable, but because their logistics completely failed them. So my point on this is you need to have congested. We need to be able to have these logistics. The difference between now and the 1950s, 70s, 90s, 2000s is that our adversary is starting to have the ability to strike our logistics at range. So contested logistics is operating a logistics environment operating a logistics system in a non-permissive environment. And the people who got to run this, in my mind, the core of it's the U.S. Army. This is one of their core missions. They support all the other services. Look, the Air Force helps with air mobility command. The Navy helps with military sea lift command. But the Army is the backbone of it. The Army commands it. It has the generals who do this and are world class at it. So those men and women who lead this have really got to get, we've got to get our hands around what do we need to succeed in this non-permissive environment? How do we get enough redundancy and resilience in our forces and redundancy if we lose some? And we're not there yet. In fact, we've had hiccups. The loss of the big Red Hill fuel storage depot in Hawaii is hurting. We've actually had a degradation in probably our operational flexibility and contested logistics capacity over the last 3 or 4 years because of that, and not the expansion we would hope to have.
Mark, that's well and good, but I also learned from you about War Reserve, and let's go to the Army on this. Brad, War Reserve. It now doesn't exist. I can see the complaining at NATO. What do we need to put the War Reserve back into the Pacific, and is the Army ready to do it?
It's great, and Mark's been a real leader on this, and it's been a research focus for me for a while, and this is very much related to everything we just talked about, right? So we need to have forward posture. We need to have forces already in the region to deter aggression. And then we have to be able to augment and resupply them as quickly as possible. That means getting forces from the continental United States, from Hawaii, from Alaska, elsewhere, to where the action is as quickly as possible. And that's where contested logistics comes in. But if you only rely on those things, it's not going to go well for us, most likely. So you want to have weapons stockpiles forward positioned. The U.S. military has a weapons stockpile in Israel. We have them elsewhere around the world. Mark and I have been arguing for a while now that we need to have such a stockpile in Taiwan, because once the shooting starts, old assumptions about being able to get our combat folks there and also logistics there and weapons resupply no longer hold. So we want to make sure that we have not only the forward position combat forces, but we have the forward position weapons stockpiles. It takes time to build those weapons and it takes time to build up the inventories. And that's why Mark and I are saying there's no time to waste.
And on Taiwan, that means the U.S. Army on Taiwan with the war reserve, or is that too sensitive right now?
So, hey, let me step in here. First, I just want to tell you, John, that for your audience, if they go to Brad's Center on Military and Political Power and my at FDD in the websites there, they will find series of articles on munitions going back, whether it's Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, or just the broad, you know, aggregation of all of them and the challenges the United States have. Really good discussions of all the limitations and interactions. That's ground truth. So on this question you're asking, we have a program called War Reserve Stockpile Allies. And then you have a dash and it's K for Korea, I for Israel. Brad and I have argued repeatedly. We've put together legislation that has not made it through yet for a War Reserve Supply Allies Taiwan. What it is in Israel and Korea is the most important weapons that you might need in a fight there. So you can imagine 155 artillery rounds in Korea, lots of them, some of which, by the way, were sent to Ukraine during the war. 155 rounds in Israel, which some of which are gone to Ukraine, but also in Israel, Patriot rounds, other types of things. I can't go into the whole list, but both missiles and munitions that would be necessary for that kind of fight. We think the same thing needs to happen for Taiwan. You need to have, they have great underground, you know, they have good Rocky Mountains where they can put caves and stow this stuff reasonably safely against attack. We can stow the weapons there, because here's what's not going to happen in a significant Taiwan conflict. There's no border with Romania, Slovakia, and Poland like you have for Ukraine. There will be no movement of U.S. supplies after the fact. It's all got to get there ahead of time. So that's what we want to do, is put that stuff there. It could be used by either Taiwan forces or our forces. If for some reason there's U.S. Army or Marines on the ground in Taiwan, have at these lockers, go kill more enemy. But if there's not, we pass it to the Taiwans to open, tell them they can take it. And they're off to the races to hold the enemy off. So we think this is critical. Munitions need to be in place. Stockpiles need to exist left of bang, so to speak, before the conflict happens. And like I said, if you go look at CMPP stuff on our website, Brad's really nailed this.
Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, U.S. Navy retired Senior Director of Center on Cyber and Technology Innovation at FDD. Brad Bowman, Senior Director of FDD Center on Military and Political Power, commenting on Indo-PACOM, what it has, what it needs, and the conflict in the future, perhaps immediate future. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.